The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I tell you, my friends, we're going along trying to enjoy all these modern gadgets, trying to sit 6 hours a day being amused and entertained and taken off to some kind of a happy dreamland to get our minds off of reality, to escape the fact and reality of life, to hide our minds from what is coming so that we could do something about it and prevent it. An average American family, just think of it now, spending 6 hours a day before television sets, being amused and entertained. You know, all of these inventions in themselves are all right, they're good. Television can become a very wonderful thing, as a matter of fact. Think of the power of radio, and now television even goes further because you not only hear the sound, you also see. You see and hear at the same time. Television brings across its message, whatever it may be, with terrific impact, both through sight and sound simultaneously. Very effective medium. But what are we doing with it? How are we using it? Oh, just to while away our time, to amuse and entertain ourselves, most of us. Listen, it brings with it a tremendous responsibility on your part. And it's going to require a little bit of self-control and guidance over your children, over your own selves, as to whether you use it wisely. Are your children sitting away there in the daytime hours with their legs crossed and getting a warped position? They're going to grow up looking crooked and deformed, looking at TV when they ought to be out running around playing in the fresh air sometimes. Now, there are some programs that are very beneficial and educational for children. Television can be used as one of the greatest educational mediums that ever came, just the same as radio, only even more so and more effectively. But what are we doing with our modern inventions?
He was right. That's probably, I don't have the exact date on that. Probably the 60s. The 1960s, as television was emerging. And if it was having that kind of a negative impact on our society, what would he be saying today? I love the point that he made there about how, the terrific impact that the emerging technology can have if you use it the right way. But he said, now, with that technology, there needs to be some guidance. There needs to be responsibility. In other words, he says, there needs to be family government, righteous government. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. I was about to say the last show of the week, but it isn't. It's Thursday. We've got more to come. Usually, I can't believe how fast we get to the final show. But we've got more, so the week, in my mind, is stretching out. Even as I talk, the live video stream of this show, you can get it at the website, thetrumpet.com, or at the Rumble channel, or the YouTube channel. One thing that emerges as a theme with the store, and that clip right there, it ties us directly to what we finished the show with yesterday, and just the impact that artificial intelligence is having. I've got another story here about the military making use of this power, this powerful form of technology. And yes, the impact in some ways can be good. In so many ways, it just accelerates the spread of evil. It magnifies evil doing. It magnifies lawlessness. It puts it on display for our children to see. And this is all that we know. One theme, as I say, that emerges from the stories we've collected for today's show is just how much this world needs righteous government. how much this world needs guidance. You look at the government of God as it's described in the Bible, and you contrast it with Satan the devil. He just wants every man doing what seems right in his own eyes. He's really promoting anarchy. Now, he'll promote authoritarian government where he needs to, where he can, to impose his will. But most people are just deceived, and they just go along, and they do what seems right. And that's exactly where the devil wants them. God's government doesn't work that way. God's government says about the saints who assist Jesus Christ in the world tomorrow. It says this in Isaiah 30. You go and show them which way to go. You tell them, no, this is the way. This is the way we're going. This is how we're going to use this technology. This is how we're not going to use this technology. Revelation 2 and 3 talks about the saints ruling with a rod of iron. With authority, in other words. That's God's family. That's God's family government. Notice Zechariah 4. We'll just try to establish the theme here before we get through some of the news items. Zechariah 14:4, it says, and his feet shall stand in that day upon the Mount of Olives, which is before Jerusalem on the east, and the Mount of Olives shall cleave in the midst thereof toward the east. And the Mount of Olives in Jerusalem is going to split in two. This is God's future headquarters city. God wants us to set our minds on this city. Even today, as we excavate, as we declare God's truth, behold your God to the cities of Judah. We've got a tour, a Celtic Throne tour coming up, starting on November 4th in Tel Aviv. And then we go to Jerusalem, then we go to Haifa, and then we go to Beersheba, and we're trying to go to Ashkelon. We're trying to go to everywhere that we can. Right now, there's seven dates locked in. And we hope to have 9 or 10 before it's all said and done. A blitz of 8 or 9 or 10 shows in 2.5 weeks. That's very exciting. That show, if you don't know, it has a wonderful message. It has a Behold Your God message. It has a message that Jerusalem, that's one of the cities we'll perform in, it has a message that Jerusalem needs, that the world needs. This world needs direction. It needs guidance. And you see that in, not just today, you see it every day with the news stories. Look at how much righteous government the mullahs need in Iran. They're not getting it from the United States. When you're dealing with religious fanatics that want to kill you, you've got to impose your will, and you've got to do it with authority, and you've got to back up the words. President Trump's talking about the economic sanctions, an economic D-Day, the worst ever against any nation. Well, I'm sure it will punish Iran in some ways, but how many strong speeches have we heard or text messages have we seen? And like I played earlier this week, the mullahs, their representatives, they're just mocking the United States. They know we don't have the will to actually go in there and demand unconditional surrender and do the action needed to bring on unconditional surrender. You can't do that unless you go in with a strong show of force that's led by the government of the United States of America. As it is, you know, it's almost as if we're playing on a level playing field, and, well, Iran, just make a deal. He said in the message when he talked about the economic punishment, he said, I've tried to make a deal with Iran more than anybody has, and they won't accept it. And, well, he's right about that. It's been a nonstop round of negotiation and memorandums and understanding and not so much understanding. Look at what happens when Jesus Christ, we're reading here in Zechariah 14, he returns to the Mount of Olives. He's coming back a second time. And your Bible prophesies of this event, this blessed event, in hundreds of passages. Luke 1, Isaiah 9, Isaiah 7, Zechariah 14, as we're reading right here, Revelation 11, Revelation 17. Revelation 17, 18, 19. John 14. If I go, I'm coming again. Well, he went. He's coming. God's going to send him. That's Acts 3, verse 21. He's going to send. Malachi 3, 1. God will send a messenger to prepare the way for the other messenger. That is Jesus Christ. God couldn't make it more plain. And yet, how many Christian denominations even believe in the literal second coming of Jesus Christ to this earth? He came the first time in a very literal sense. He came in the flesh. He's not coming in the flesh the second time. He's coming as a glorified spirit being, the Son of God, King of kings, Lord of lords. You can read all about that in Malachi 3, verses 1 through 5. He's coming like a refiner's fire, fuller's soap. He's coming to purge this earth of all the impurities, of all the lawlessness. And how's he going to do that? By using God's family government, by using his God-given authority. He's going to impose his will on this world. And the nations, plural, Revelation 11, verse 15, they're going to obey him. They're going to submit to his rule. Verse 9, it says, this is Zechariah 14, and the Lord shall be king over all the earth. In that day there shall be one Lord, and his name one. Just one supreme ruler over all the earth. King of kings and Lord of lords, as I say. And he's going to forcibly put down every form of resistance against God's government. And you can read verse, it's pretty graphic, verse 12. You can see what he does to defeat the armies of this world. They're going to assemble to fight against him. It's unbelievable. That's the spirit of these 6,000 years, the spirit of the age. Fight against God. Fight against God's law. Fight against God's government. Fight against the truth. Blot out the Bible. God's about to establish his government on this earth and then restore what was taken away at the rebellion of Lucifer. God's government. It's coming back. Verse 16, it says, and it shall come to pass that everyone that is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall even go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. What is that, some people say? What does that mean? Well, look at the difference. Everyone that's left, it's going to be a small number compared to the population of the earth today because of man, because of tribulation, because of nuclear warfare. Those that are left of the nations which came against Jerusalem, they assembled around Jerusalem to fight against God's government. But it says, underneath the government of God, they'll go up every year to worship the King, to obey God, to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. What a world this will be. And what a contrast to the present evil world, Satan's world, where, as I say, Satan just wants us to do what seems right in our own eyes. Every man just do what seems right. Think about artificial intelligence, as we discussed on yesterday's show. I mean, if Mr. Armstrong's back in the 1960s saying that television and spending hours per day in front of it if that's turning our brains to mush, if that's destroying our children and their future, what about the technologies today? You know what artificial intelligence, someone just told me, we produced this video, we played it on this show about Mr. Armstrong's conversion, and you know, it was about 8 minutes long, and it went back to 1926 and the challenges that his sister-in-law and his wife brought against him. And he delved into the Bible. And we had some quotes from his autobiography where we used artificial intelligence to get a voice that sounded like his voice reading the autobiography. And one of our students was like, I loved hearing it. And I know it was artificial intelligence, but it just kind of stirred the imagination to think about this is a younger version of Herbert Armstrong talking about his early years and coming to a knowledge of the truth. What did Mr. Armstrong say about technology? If it's used right, it can have a terrific impact. But it comes with a great responsibility, a serious responsibility. And you need some guidance. You need someone with authority. You need someone with backed by God's government to make sure it's used the right way. To make sure it isn't used for evil or nefarious or self-serving purposes. So, you know, in most of these articles about AI and the one we have about the military using it, what you have over and again is just a lot of discussion and, you know, reporters being reporters, they've been trained, go out and find this opinion and then, go out and get an interview with another guy that has a different opinion. Well, I don't think we should add that technology. It's too dangerous. And then the other guy, well, we absolutely should. We've got to stay ahead of the curve. We've got to compete with China. That's the way it is in this world. If that's the way this church operated, we would never get anything done. We'd just have a lot of opinions. As I tell the students so often, thank God for his government and appreciate it. That's how the work gets done. That's how the work grows. That's how this campus you see behind me, that's how it grows and prospers and produces fruit. That's why there's unity and peace. That's why we don't have campus protests that break out on the roads that go through this campus. That's not to say we you know, never have to address some issues or some challenges, some problems even. But how do we deal with those? With the government of God, always. Always. Television in the 1960s was destroying people's brains. Mr. Armstrong said, it can have a terrific impact, but you need to enforce some rules. You need control over the content. Look at what is on the airwaves. I say airwaves these days. It's coming through cables. Cable TV, the internet. Look at the filth. Really, about the only thing there's restrictions on is God's truth. If you get too strong with the truth of God, there's going to be a station manager somewhere that doesn't like it. But the filth, the smut, the crime, the sex, that's fine. All of that's fine. That's totally okay. What is artificial intelligence going to do to our minds, our brains, to our children, to the military? No one seems to be asking those questions. There's the discussion points. It could do this, could do that, but there's no authority. No, you heard it the other day on this show. It's like the Wild West. Anything goes. That's very dangerous. And that's why that subject's featured on the August issue of the Trumpet magazine. I played this clip from David McCullough on in this morning's forum. It's from 1993. It's an old clip. McCullough well-known historian. He died in 2022, wrote so many books, loved history. And he went around and he visited like 100 university campuses talking to young people. He was trying to get young people stirred up and excited about their history. He said, how are you going to love your country if you don't love your history? It's impossible. You got to know the history in order to love it, in order to be a real genuine patriot. Listen to what he said, clip 14.
We are, in my view, in a crisis condition. We are becoming, at the age level, let's say, below 40 years old, of an historically illiterate nation.
That was 1993. The clip from Mr. Armstrong was from the 1960s. Where are we today? People under 40, he said, in 1993. Now we're what? Those under 40-year-olds, they're up into their 70s now. The ones he was talking about then. Historically illiterate as a nation. That, as he says in another clip, I'll play it in a second, that's a risk. It's a dangerous risk for our nation. It's a national security risk. It sure is. This level of ignorance, have we ever seen it this bad? Have we ever seen it so dark, spiritually speaking? Even with respect to our own national history. We've talked recently about the end of history, the end of reading. We have a story in the stack about young people and how that, I mean, really young people, most little kids, toddlers, they love hearing stories. They love going through books. They love the picture books. They love when they learn to read, they love to read. And there's a story at Vox that says when they get to be about 9 years of age, then they begin to lose that love. And how that publishers are doing things like, you know, the Harry Potter book to keep young people interested in reading. That's what you have to give them to arouse their interest. Harry Potter, of all things. That's like television in the 60s. Okay, so it might not be as bad as other things today, other influences. But still, you look at what it's based on and that's what we have to do. To get a 10-year-old to keep reading, really? That's an awfully low standard. You know what the article, what Vox says we need to do to solve this crisis, to keep young people reading books? We've got to contact the publishers to produce more books that are like Harry Potter so that they'll keep reading. That's the solution. No talk of government. Or guidance from parents, loving parents, or parents that are telling their children, you're going to read this, and I'm going to read it too. There was a point with my children I did that when they were teenagers. Yep, we're all reading it. We've got a book club over here. You're going to be part of it. There was some resistance. And then there was some insistence. And we did it. And guess what? In the end, we loved it. The kids loved it. We need guidance, don't we? We need family government. We need encouragement. It's something that can have a terrific impact if it's used the right way. You look at all of these ills, these societal ills, and it would be easy to just blame the technology. But look, go back to that clip we played of Mr. Armstrong. He actually praised the technology. He actually said, you know, television is a powerful medium. You can do terrific things with it. But with that incredible technology comes a weighty responsibility. And that means we need guidance. We need direction. What he was saying there is that the problem was not TV. The problem was the lack of government, righteous government, godly authority. That's what you need over any of these. emerging technologies to make, this is the way it'll be in the world tomorrow. And Zechariah 14 and Revelation 11 show that. It's awesome. And at the same time, what a contrast it is when you compare it to today's world. This is one more clip from David McCullough. Now, this takes you back to 2005, a different hearing, clip 15.
And this could be exciting. This could bring young people and their teachers into a love of history, which is essential. If we raise generation after generation of young Americans who are historically illiterate, we're running a terrible risk for this country. You can have amnesia of a society, which is as detrimental as amnesia of an individual. And of course, if people begin to think that all that we have, all the blessings, our freedoms, our art, our music, our literature, our great institutions, the faith, the creed we have that has held us together for 229 years in equality, and the idea that all men are created equal, the idea of the ideal of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, of all of that seems to be something that just fell out of the sky, that it's just part of the natural world and that nobody struggled for it. There's no story behind it. Then we are really, in my view, in the soup. Jefferson said it perfectly. He said, any nation that expects to be ignorant and free expects what never was and never can be. Our very freedoms depend on education, and that's why education has been a sustaining theme, one of the great guidelines all through our history, from the time of the founders down to the present. And we're falling down. The literacy rate in Massachusetts in 1776, I'm sorry to say, was higher than it is today. We are raising children who don't know who George Washington was.
21 years ago. And is it better today, the literacy rate? As I've been discussing this week, there's more and more young people that just simply cannot think or reason because they're letting machines do it for them. They're losing all their judgment, or they're losing understanding. Wisdom is gone. We need guidance. With the technology comes a weighty responsibility. Look at the evils God describes all through the Bible. Human nature, we've gone through that so many times, Jeremiah 17, Romans 8. In Proverbs 6, it says, these six things does the Lord hate. Yes, seven are an abomination to him. A proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked imaginations, feet that be swift and running to mischief, a false witness that speaks lies, and he that sows discord among brethren. When you look at artificial intelligence, again, there may be some positive benefit here and there in a few instances. Maybe this can be a good thing, maybe that, but on the whole, the things that God hates, they are going to be intensified and promoted and made more widespread because of technology, because of artificial intelligence. Just watch. Just watch. It gets back to law and government. Rules, regulations established by God, not by these big congressional bodies that just create all these laws that people disobey every day because there's no government to back it up. There's no enforcement. The law, as we said all through the Audubon years, the laws to secure the border were there. They just weren't being applied. They were being ignored, disregarded. And people were streaming into the country by the millions because of it. Same thing happened in Ceuta, over in Spain. And it's still a problem today, by the way. These Muslims just roaming the streets, some of them violent, carrying out rape, burglary, all those kinds of things. And we just invite it in. No boundaries No borders. It doesn't just apply to a nation's actual border. We live in a world where there's no boundaries or borders. We live in a nation where we think, if anything goes, that is the best possible freedom that you could imagine. Just do whatever you want. Well, people are doing that. And in a lot of cases, carrying out violent acts. Anything goes. The old child rearing booklet, I remember the point it made. I read it when our kids were little. How that juvenile delinquency, that starts in the home. If there's no government or authority in the home, well, how can we expect the young people when they leave the home to have a healthy, you know, respect for the local law enforcement officials, government, or the government in the land? This same proverb, Proverbs 6, if you continue in verse 20, this is guidance and direction. It says, "My son, keep your father's commandment, and forsake not the law of your mother. Bind them continually upon your heart and tie them about your neck." It says, "When you go, it shall lead you. When you sleep, it shall keep you. And when you awake, it shall talk with you." Keep those guiding principles of God ever before you. Let that guide your life. We gave a program yesterday, or taped one, for the Key of David. On men, we've talked about the dearth of male leadership on the last two shows, and we wanted to create another show on that. But it says in Psalm 37 in verse 23, "The steps of a good man are ordered by the Eternal." How many good men are left? There was a movie years ago that went by the title, A Few Good Men. That's about it. The Bible says Barnabas was a good man in Acts 11. Obviously, Jesus Christ, that was a real man, a man's man. That was a masculine man. That was a righteous man, an obedient man, a praying man. He was a leader, a servant leader. Set for us a perfect example. If you want to be a good man, then you have to let God guide your steps. You have to let God order your steps. God is the one who defines what's right and wrong. The reason the world is the way it is because we don't let God define it. We come up with definitions ourselves, and everyone's got a different one. That's why you've got to have the discussion on these new technologies. Someone that says, it's going to be great. Yeah, we're going to make trillions. This is how we're going to bail out the United States from bankruptcy. And then you've got the other side. No, it's all going to be evil. It's going to lead to our ruin. China's going to overtake us. Why can't we get God's perspective? He's the one with the authority to define good and evil, what's right and wrong. We just read some of it in Proverbs 6. Iran International, they're weighing attacks on military targets in Europe. So President Trump wants escalation, at least on the economic front. Economic D-Day. And then what's Iran's response? Well, we're going to go after, you know, soft targets in Europe. U.S. targets in Europe. This is from Bloomberg Television, clip one.
In this last round of strikes, they exhibited an ability to use proxies to expand against broader oil infrastructure, whether that was in the Red Sea or in Egypt. I think they're also saying, look, we could go even further and we could go to European bases that are hosting your forces should you choose to return to an escalatory kinetic path.
So what kind of capability do the Iranians have to reach these bases in Europe?
Yes, certainly. So I think first it's important to scope which bases in Europe. As you've indicated, Cyprus is a very likely choice. It would almost certainly, I think, be some kind of base or nation in Europe that is providing access or basing for U.S. forces.
This Iran International piece says the sources described last month's strike on a U.S. base in Jordan, which killed three American service members, as Tehran's most accurate long-range attack to date and evidence of its ability to hit targets farther afield. This was also a message to Europe. It can receive missiles, so it should know where it should stand in this war. A very big mistake, such as hitting our infrastructure, could make the war go beyond the region and reach Europe. This is Iran. It's quoting some Iranian official. But this is Iran. Getting a little pushy. As we know from Daniel 11:40, at the time of the end, it's for the end time. The king of the south will push at the king of the north. Push at Europe. We're seeing the early stages of that. Skip ahead to number four. This is from The Hill on President Trump's economic D-Day, clip four.
There is a new front in the war with Iran. President Trump is targeting the country's economy and is threatening other countries that do business with Iran.
President Trump is calling it an economic D-Day, an attempt to cut Iran off from the rest of the world and pressure them to come to the negotiating table. It all comes, as the president says, there are currently no talks scheduled with Iran.
After months of military strikes, President Trump is now trying to squeeze Iran financially.
We have things that we could sanction. We have very draconian sanctions, and we'll see what happens.
The president announced what he calls, quote, the most crushing economic operation ever taken against any country, and warns other nations they could pay a price for helping Iran. The president said countries allowing their banks, businesses, airports, or government entities to provide Iran an economic lifeline could face tremendous economic consequences. Iran's foreign minister called the president's economic D-Day a distraction and warns this could threaten the global economy. But the White House says countries are getting oil elsewhere.
People have found other alternatives, which they never thought about. Texas, Alaska, Louisiana. I think the Hormuz Strait's not going to be quite as important as it was in the past.
So now the question becomes whether this new economic pressure will do what months of military action was unable to do, and that's to resume these negotiations.
Months of military action, unable to bring Iran to its knees. And now it's economic D-Day. From the president's tweet, I'm announcing the most crushing economic operation ever taken against any country. It's always the biggest and the best, the most powerful ever, ever in history. And Iran is still alive and kicking. They're mocking us. They're making fun of us. They're making fun of America. Oh, so your military strategy didn't quite pan out. And now we're on to this. The Jerusalem Post has a piece. Are Turkey, Israel gearing up to fight in Syrian territory? This comes after Israel struck Syria earlier in all of this, this conflict. Turkey's being drawn in. Syria is rebuilding its military power. And of course, there's Iran. And then you've got the proxies, Hezbollah, Hamas. Another one from the Jerusalem Post. U.S. weighs scaling back Middle East military presence after months of Iranian attacks. Well, all of these things are significant. If you understand Bible prophecy, the U.S. is weighing, scaling it all back. And that just gives a wide open door to Germany and then the Psalm 83 Alliance, which is put together, by the way, to oppose Israel. There's the clash, obviously, between the king of the north and the king of the south. But here, little Israel, Judah, is just going to invite the king of the north in, thinking that it'll make him safer. The U.S. is considering scaling back its military presence in the Middle East as a result of the war with Iran. The Washington Post reported Tuesday, citing several officials familiar with the matter. Now, just think on that for a moment. Here's this massive war operation started in February, and then all the big talk, greatest in history, most devastating ever. The Navy just sunk to the bottom of the ocean. And here we are 6 months later, and we're talking about the U.S., not Iran, scaling back its influence. The U.S. scaling back its influence. Who could have foreseen this? Well, we did. We did. We were right. Tomorrow's news today. If you don't subscribe to The Trumpet, now would be a good time to get one. 10 issues per year sent to your mailbox. No cost, no obligation. You can get to the latest issue at our website, thetrumpet.com. The U.S. currently houses troops and military infrastructure in several countries in the Middle East, including Bahrain, Qatar, Kuwait, the UAE, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, and Jordan. The U.S. maintains temporary facilities in other countries, such as Israel. It says, but after the launch of Operation Epic Fury, Iran responded with attacks on Gulf states that housed U.S. troops, launching thousands of ballistic missiles and one-way drones over the course of months. So now we're thinking, maybe we should scale it back. That way it's not so risky for U.S. soldiers. That way we'll be safe. If we pull back, if we isolate in place, then we'll be safe. Pretty amazing sequence of events. And you are kept right up to speed with the significance of the twists and turns at thetrumpet.com. From Foreign Affairs, how AI could hollow out the U.S. military. Well, that doesn't sound so good. When people think about the risks of mixing AI and armed forces, well, it gives this spiel on the Terminator, the movie, I guess another blast from the past. It says further, according to a growing body of research, AI use is affecting people's cognitive capacity to evaluate evidence, making independent judgments, and even do their basic jobs. It's making us dumber. What a crutch. Just total, and in the military now, total reliance on technology, on what some bot says to do. It says here, for example, people can suffer from what is called automation bias, the tendency to defer to machine judgments over their own. This was true before the advent of AI. Simply search for videos of people who blindly followed their navigation systems and drove their cars into lakes. But AI could make automation bias even worse. Analysts have found that relying on AI can impair skill development for new learners while degrading knowledge among experts. When researchers gave computer scientists and oncologists AI assistance and later took it away, both groups performed worse at their jobs than they did before using it. It brings to mind, doesn't it, Isaiah 3, God taking away our blessings. And it says in Isaiah 3 and verse 2, he takes away the mighty man, the man of war, the man of war, the judge, the prophet, the prudent, and the ancient, the captain of 50, the honorable man, the counselor, the cunning artificer, the eloquent orator. He's taking all those things away. Well, and you look at some of these stories and think, it seems like they're being replaced with machines. With new technology, technology that could have a terrific impact if it was used the right way, if there's guidance from loving government, righteous government. Automation bias. Some commanders hope to use AI to support war analysis and to help develop military courses of action. Now again, think of Ezekiel 7. When the call for battle comes, we're not going to answer the call. Because there's some kind of technological breakdown. There's some kind of cyber attack that prevents the message from going out. These are sobering times we're living in, that we're entering into. It says here, it also risks diminishing the ability of commanders and soldiers to independently evaluate or develop creative military options. Yes, it comes with a heavy risk. It certainly does. Listen to this clip from NATO on using AI in the military, clip 11.
In the ever-evolving landscape of modern warfare, the need for precise and timely decision-making has never been more critical. The complex operating environment demands a level of understanding that goes beyond human capacity alone. The sheer magnitude of information, the speed of engagements, and the intricate web of variables create a battlefield where human cognition alone falls short. In the heart of our command centers, AI is emerging as a force multiplier, providing our military with unparalleled capabilities to analyze, adapt, and overcome the complexities of the modern operating environment.
Artificial intelligence really underpins so much of what NATO now does, right from military operations through to political decision making. It is the backbone of so much of NATO's activity. And because of that, NATO is taking a very broad approach to adopting AI.
It's our backbone. It's making our decisions. We're just following the machines, not the mighty men of war, not the captain of 50. Not the eloquent teacher. No, the bot. Following the bots. AI is more capable than earlier technologies, and it's already overwhelming workers in other similarly disciplined fields. In medicine, for instance, evidence is accumulating that even experienced doctors struggle to reliably catch incorrect AI recommendations. They're following the recommendations of artificial intelligence. You've probably gotten health advice from a bot. Do a search on Google. How can I improve my... And who's to say if it's right or wrong? What's the information based on? We saw during COVID just how many different opinions there were. And then the ones that didn't conform... What happened? Well, they just got blotted out. They were deleted. They had no voice. Listen to this from, this is from CBS Morning, I think Morning News, clip 12.
Turning now to a topic we talk a lot about almost every day, artificial intelligence. It is showing up, well, you know this, just about everywhere, including the battlefield. The U.S. military says it wants to become an AI-first fighting force, and it is investing billions to make that happen. But some members of the service say the technology is evolving too fast.
What would you say to skeptics that it's ghoulish, that we're outsourcing death to robots?
I understand the concern. It's ghoulish to me. It is disturbing, but it's also foolish not to adopt it because our adversaries will. I would not be willing to put our nation into that position.
The question is no longer whether this future is coming. It's how much control humans and the U.S. government are willing to surrender.
That four-star general told me you could compare this moment in history to the Industrial Revolution, even the Manhattan Project, when the United States developed the world's first atomic bomb.
It's ghoulish. It's dangerous. It's disturbing. But, you know, we have to do it. We have to. How many times have you heard me say this? This week. Well, we're forced to do this. We're forced to go all in. We have no choice. And this is the way many parents reason. Well, I mean, we're forced to get them the gadgets, to get them a phone. What if they get abducted? They're using it in school. That we have to give them all the technology. We have to give them all the machines. We have to let the bots take charge of their education. This is from a magazine called Futurism. Teachers warn that students are losing the ability to think as they lean on AI for, wait for it, everything. Everything. An MIT study earlier this year found that people who used AI while they wrote an essay showed lower brain activity compared to people who didn't. Moreover, the people who composed with AI struggled to remember a single line from the essays they just produced, with their brain activity staying at a reduced level even when they were later asked to write again without an AI's help. There's no part of the writing process that can be offloaded to an AI without some cost. That's the warning. It comes with a heavy cost. Another one a little bit later. This is from Study Finds. It says a 22-year-old study of more than 1,700 adults found frequent TV watching was linked to smaller volumes in brain regions vulnerable to Alzheimer's disease, plus more damage to the brain's internal wiring. Adults who reported frequent TV watching in the late 1980s had smaller volumes decades later in brain regions. Further on, it says the gap suggests the type of sedentary activity may matter as much as the total time spent seated. For 22 years, we've studied this, and it's harmful. They should have just gone back to the quote we started the show with today, the clip from Mr. Armstrong. Just as TV was emerging. Now listen, you can get the sound, you can get the message, you can see it, you can see the images, you can see the footage. It's a powerful medium. It can have a terrific impact. But with that technology comes a weighty responsibility. We need guidance. We need direction. We need government. We need God's government. It says people who reported watching TV very often had smaller volumes in several brain regions, including areas linked to Alzheimer's. These associations persisted even after accounting for participants' physical activity levels, blood pressure, diabetes, smoking, drinking, body weight. One possible reason for the difference, the researchers suggest, is that sitting at work often involves sustained mental effort and goal-directed thinking, which may help brain structure over time. Sitting at work, you're doing something, you're working the mind, you're working the brain. But when you're sitting at television or the screen, not so much. It says here, sex played a notable role in the findings. Among men, frequent TV watching was broadly linked to smaller volumes across multiple brain regions, including areas involved in emotion, language, visual processing, and memory. Men who sat more at work also showed larger volumes in specific frontal brain regions. In women, these associations were largely absent or much weaker. Well, we could go on and on. Maybe we can finish here with CBS on why technology isn't benefiting kids. Clip 13.
As humans, we can synchronize with one another. Human biology can actually link up. And you can feel that. We call that affective empathy. And in those moments, learning goes up. Anytime you bring a screen then into the mix, it tends to cut off that synchrony. So you felt it. If you've ever been at a dinner table and everything's going great, suddenly someone brings out a phone, you can almost feel that moment where everything kind of drops. It's that same thing in classrooms. When screens come out, that synchrony drops, learning starts to go down.
But the kids seem to be doing their ABCs and they're listening to music and they're learning about history. They're swiping. They seem very engaged with the screens. But you said they're not really learning?
Yeah, there's a big difference between engagement and learning. Learning requires focused attention. Engagement, especially the kind we do on tech, is rapid jumping of your attention, which we tend to call multitasking, which is another one of the worst things you can do for learning. So even though your eyes are on screen for long periods of time, that doesn't mean you're actually learning the same way.
New technologies can have a terrific impact, as Herbert Armstrong said in that clip we played at the start. but it brings with it tremendous responsibility on our part, tremendous responsibility. And it's going to require some self-control and guidance over ourselves and over our children. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. We appreciate you joining us on the program, and we'll see you again tomorrow. There is a show tomorrow.